The following is an unrehearsed interview for the Kentucky Oral History Commission by John Klee with Charles Meadows here at the Southern States office in Maysville, Kentucky. The interview is being conducted on May the 15th at the Southern States offices. Mr. Meadows, if you'll just begin, just tell me a little bit about your background. What, where you're from?
Originally, I'm from Flemingsburg, mm-hmm. Kentucky. Was raised in Fleming County. After high school, I spent 5 years with the Army. Mm-hmm. My degree is in military science. Mm-hmm. After coming back from overseas, I started to work with Southern States Co-op. Mm-hmm. I've worked in 3 retail stores. I've worked in a regional office as a field salesman. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity came available to come to Maysville as the manager of this store. And for the last 8 years, I have been here.
So that was in 79 that
yes.
we came here? Okay. Explain. Someone doesn't know what kinds of services a retail store like this gives. What kinds of things does?
Okay, we sell feed, mm-hmm. Either in the bag or in the bulk. We grind patrons' corn. Mm-hmm. We pick up and deliver their corn if need to be. We sell fertilizer, mm-hmm. both in the bag, in the bulk, or in a liquid suspension. We custom apply fertilizer, or we furnish fertilizer buggies mm-hmm. for the farmer to apply himself. We provide agricultural chemicals. Mm-hmm. They can either be impregnated on dry fertilizer or mixed with a liquid fertilizer, or sold over the counter to the patron and he applies them himself. Mm-hmm. We sell all types of seed, anywhere from lawn and garden to field seeds. And then the major farm supply commodities, anything from a shovel and a rake to mm-hmm. a refrigerator for the house or a freezer for the ladies or
these kinds of, I just want kind of rough figures, but how many employees do you have here?
I have 16.
16, and what kinds of sales are generated, you know, in a year?
We'll do on the average $5 million a year.
Okay. Explain a little bit about the concept of Southern States Cooperative. What does that mean?
Southern States was organized back in Virginia, back in the early 30s. It was organized by 2 gentlemen that were farmers, and they needed a source of supply for their items. Mm-hmm. Back in those days, I understand, you know, just wasn't too many farm supply dealers around, so these individuals formed a co-op where they could go out and buy their fertilizer or their grass seeds or their feeds at a reasonable price, mm-hmm. and it has grown from those 2 individuals to now where it operates in a 7-state territory.
Okay. It still operates as cooperative also.
Right.
Farmers.
We are a farm cooperative.
Okay. And people that purchase goods here become part of that cooperative.
That's right.
And have voting privileges depending on
yes.
How much they buy?
Yes. Okay. There's 3 types of stores mm-hmm. anymore. You have the stores that are owned by Southern States.
Okay.
And they are cooperative stores. Mm-hmm. You have a store like at Maysville. It's what is termed as a local cooperative. Mm-hmm. And it's owned by the people that do business with
it. I see. Okay.
We have a board of directors that I work for. Mm-hmm. And then you have some, what they term as private agencies, which is a store that is just owned by a private individual, and he is franchised to buy Southern States product.
Okay, I see.
Now, that store is operated a little bit different because it's an individual right. store, and he can operate the way he so yeah. wants. It is not a cooperative.
But you have to have meetings and report to board of directors and
yes.
members and so on.
Yes.
This project's primarily interested in tobacco, so I'm going to kind of go through a season with you and let you explain to me the kinds of things that a tobacco farmer has to get through you, and maybe a little bit even about cost, approximately the way they are now. When the farmers, the first thing they do, of course, is prepare a plant bed. Now, most farmers today gas a bed. How does okay. they have to, do they buy that from you?
Yes. Generally, the farmer will start in the fall.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He will plow his tobacco bed, and then he will purchase the gas mm-hmm. and the material needed to gas that bed. Now, he can buy it from a farm supply dealer like us, or he can have it custom applied by different individuals that have the equipment and supplies to do this.
Okay.
A lot of them like to do it in the fall, uh-huh. and then in early February, this bed will be, plastics will be taken off of it. It will be raked, be disc and raked real good, and anytime in late February, they'll start sowing their right. tobacco seeds and putting their canvas yeah. on.
Now, for someone that doesn't know, what is this gas? It's a herbicide,
It's a herbicide yeah. that just sterilizes the soil.
Okay, and will kill any kind of organisms growing. Plant organisms. So that's the.
It will kill most plant organisms. Okay. You'll always have sure. some weeds that will.
Now I know that. Some of these chemicals, obviously, are, this is something that is a relatively new thing. I mean, it used to be that farmers would burn their beds to achieve the same kind of purpose. Don't you provide training and so forth for certain chemicals?
Yes, basically all the chemicals that we handle anymore are restricted use.
Okay, explain chemicals. What that means, restricted use.
It basically means they're dangerous. So any farmer, before he can purchase these types of chemicals from us, must have gone through a three-phase training that is conducted by, in our area, by the University of Kentucky Extension Service.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells him the proper ways to apply these chemicals and the proper procedures that he should use, to be careful not to get the chemicals on him or to get them in his eyes or to get it in his body in some form. Most of these chemicals are deadly. Methyl bromide, the chemical they use to gas tobacco beds, is very deadly. Several years ago, it got scarce. And this happened up in the north, I think it was in Michigan. There was a farmer that purchased some gas in the fall because it was scarce, and he took it in his house. In fact, he put it under his bed in his bedroom. It's in a pressurized container, and during the winter, these containers started leaking, and it killed his whole family. So the farmer has to be trained to handle all types of these chemicals.
So the Extension Service does the training and provides what, a certificate or a card,
yes.
and then they have to show that to you?
Yes. It's okay. illegal for us to sell mm-hmm. any of the restricted use chemicals to a farmer that does not have a card that shows he's been trained.
Do you have very many problems with this, or are there farmers that...
Yes, you really do, because a lot of your farmers just don't want to take the time to sure. to go sit down and do the training. It's basically a 3R mm-hmm. class where they show you some films. They have different individuals that will talk about the chemicals, and then they have a easy test that you take at the time that if you'll just sit there and listen to them, you have no problem. But they just don't want to take the time to do it.
Sure.
And it's to their own benefit. And when they come in here, it's against the law for me to sell to them. And they get very irate at times, you know, because they come in here and we refuse to sell them these products. And unfortunately, they can go some places that we'll sell it to them.
Well, that's what I was wondering. There are some sources that...
There are some sources. Some people just ignore the law and they'll sell it.
Yeah.
And right now, the law is not enforced that much. I guess we really don't have the people to enforce it, or the government doesn't have the money to hire the people. And it's a bad situation.
Sure. Yeah. It depends on how many beds you put out and so forth, but what kind of costs are you talking about here for the gas?
Basically, a gas for an average bed, it costs you about $20.
Okay, and of course they have to cover the bed with plastic.
You have to have a heavy type plastic, which will cost you about another $10.
Right.
And that's all you need to gas your bed.
Now, just again for the uninitiated, that gas is released underneath that plastic and then spreads throughout. It's closed in.
Yes, it spreads throughout the ground under the plastic.
And that's what they learn in those training sessions, where to place the cans and how to open them and so forth to do that. Okay, after you have beds, of course, you have to prepare your fields. What kinds of products are farmers using on their tobacco fields? Do very many. Of course, you have to lime, I guess. Fertilize.
Okay. For your tobacco fields, you need to plan this early, and in the fall is a good time to start. If the farmer will pick out the field that he wants to raise tobacco in for the next spring, the first thing he should do would be get a soil test.
Yeah.
Have the soil analyzed and find out what the pH is, if there's any micronutrients needed, and then how much nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash is required to grow his particular crop of tobacco and to maintain his land.
Now, soil test, of course, again, a lot of those are done through the Extension Service. Is that right?
Yes.
Do you all, I guess you all sell kits and so forth too, or?
No.
Yeah.
There are some kits that you can purchase. They're not that accurate.
I see.
Anymore, if I know at least here at our store, now, if a farmer that trades with us will pay for the soil test.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And you're only talking about $7 or $8 to have a test run. You can either have it run at the university, or there are several private labs available to have it run at.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't run a soil test, you're just kidding yourself.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your farmers say, well, I just need a ton of fertilizer.
Uh-huh.
And in most cases, they're wasting their money because you don't need a ton of straight tobacco fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that you need more potash, or you need more nitrogen, or you need more phosphorus. And the only way to be accurate is to have a test and see. Some of these different nutrients are very high priced, and you're just wasting money in most cases. Also, when you guess at it too, you really don't know what the pH is, and you can be guessing too low.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the best interest to have a soil test. It may cost him more 1 year to fertilize than it will the next year, but at least he's going to put on what he needs.
What kinds, again, let's say that I'm going to raise 5,000 pounds of tobacco, which would be, about 2 acres or in that range? Well, a little more than that, probably.
Yes,
yeah,
probably.
The yields aren't that, depending on where you're growing it and so on and so forth. But
An average yield would be between 2,000 and 2,500 pounds per acre.
It depends on what you need, I guess, on how much your expenses are going to be then.
Yes.
What kinds of prices, you know, for say an average farmer, if he, if his field's in pretty good shape, is there other standard kinds of things they do?
For fertilizer, you mean? Well, not anymore. It's not really standard.
Yeah.
It's, if they take their soil test, an average to grow a 2,500 pound crop of tobacco, you would probably need about 100 units of nitrogen and 200 units of phosphate and 300 units of potash.
Mm-hmm.
That's the equivalent to 2,000 pounds of 5-10-15.
I see.
And you're talking about $110 for that.
Now, that's you rent the little buggies for these farmers to use.
Yes.
Or, you know, you can actually even apply it yourself.
Or you, yes, or you can buy it in the bag and put it on by hand.
Okay. Do farmers spray their fields to prevent weeds at all?
Yes.
Okay. What do they use for that?
Okay. There is a number of herbicides that you can use. The disadvantage is anytime you use a herbicide, you can have some chemical reactions in your tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like growing an organic garden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't use the chemicals, the plants will grow better, but when you're raising several acres of tobacco, what loss you would have by using a herbicide would more than offset the labor would be required to hoe out an acre of tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
So there are Prowl and Baylam and Tillam and Parlan is all popular tobacco herbicides.
Okay.
They'll cost you anywhere from about $10 to about $25 an acre.
So that's a lot easier than spending hundreds of hours. And you know, most farmers just don't have the labor. And
it's just not practical.
Right.
Unless you had a large family, you couldn't go out there and hire the labor to chop out tobacco seed.
Now that's sprayed on.
Yes.
And again, does that require some of the training? And
yes. Yes,
okay.
It's another chemical that, mm-hmm. that is hazardous. Your tobacco herbicides are not poisonous,
mm-hmm.
but then again, they are hazardous and they can react differently on different people.
Okay. Disease control is something that has to be taken care of early on. Of course, we had a bad blue mold problem, and I guess that's something that's most farmers are still, are more farmers taking chances on blue mold, or most of them feeding forward?
Most of them today, there is a preventative for blue mold, which is a product by the name of Ritamil.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very expensive fungicide. It'll cost you between $50 and $60
an acre.
But really, that's good insurance.
Uh-huh.
It's money that's well spent. You never know when it's going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't want to take a chance.
That has to be carefully applied too, because if there's a rain or something afterwards, you could.
All chemicals are very sensitive, and they're all based on a certain amount of rainfall after they're put on.
Uh-huh.
And just like this year right now, we've gone about 5 to 6 weeks without any rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the farmers have applied their chemicals, and unfortunately, a lot of them are going to be wasted because we just have not had the rainfall to get the chemicals to carry in the ground and to work.
At what point do you apply the Ritamil? Is that
all of your tobacco chemicals should be applied just before you transplant your tobacco plants. Once you put the chemicals in the ground, they start to work.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them have a life expectancy of about 60 to 90 days.
Okay.
And that's about half of the growing season for a tobacco field.
Uh-huh.
So you only want to put them on just prior to transplant.
Now, some farmers have applied root meal when they're setting in the water. It's not...
That is not recommended. Sibagagi is the manufacturers of root meal. The recommended rate is 2 quarts per acre sprayed on just prior to transplanting.
Okay.
Now, you always have some people that get innovative and they come up with some good country ideas.
Right.
But then again, there are some side effects to it too.
Sure.
Because using with root meal, you've got to be specific that you get 2 quarts per acre.
Yeah.
Some people put it in transplanter solution and you don't have a good way of measuring. And I have seen fields of tobacco killed by using too much root meal.
I see. Why, that chemical, are there other kinds of fungicides that are pretty standard, or is that the one that...
No, root meal is the only fungicide that is available for blue mold.
Yeah. I was thinking about other diseases. Are there other chemicals?
There are other chemicals for different diseases. You may get wildfire or black shank or other diseases in a tobacco crop. Depending on the disease, there are chemicals available to spray on your tobacco.
Okay, so you've got like a chemistry lab for different diseases.
Yes.
You know, if somebody says, I've got, you know, a blank shank, then you say, well, this is what we're recommending. Is there very much competition among those companies?
Yes, that is. It is really fierce today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to keep up with these chemicals because every year you probably got 25 or 30 companies and they're all coming out with a new chemical every year.
Mm-hmm. And they're all coming in here to see you, I guess.
They all come in and it's very hard to keep up with. Uh-huh. And we use in our store, we use the manual that is published by the University of Kentucky because the university does a lot of research on the different chemicals and they won't recommend a product until they have done extensive research. And there's just too many products on the market for anybody to retain. So we go exclusively with the recommendations of the university. That makes our job a whole lot easier, and it makes it safe.
Yeah. What about the, you mentioned the high cost of root meal. Is that because there's only one company involved, or is it the chemical?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
Because root meal, well, a lot of it is controlled by the government, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can go to South America and buy root meal for $15 to $20 a gallon.
Mm.
Here in North America, it's $120 a gallon.
Uh-huh.
The makers claim that the price difference is due to the government regulations that are put on them.
I see.
And that is true to an extent. It's also true that Sibagagi is the only makers of root meal at the present time. And they're going to get the money while they can.
There's no comparable product, I guess, that'll do the same thing.
And it's they kind of got you over the barrel, but there is a lot of research that goes into this.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And they've got to try to make their money back.
While we're talking about the chemicals and so forth, tobacco, well, there's still a pretty large belt, but, you know, it's not that extensively grown a crop. Does that make it, are there still lots of companies involved in the tobacco business? Or
yes.
You know,
the tobacco business in the world, is a big business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the United States, we've had some hard times in the last few years, but I think that is beginning to turn around, and it's a big business for North America.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of going through the year and the kinds of products that farmers come in for you to buy. Today, of course, there's sucker control that farmers use. What do they use for sucker control? When do they apply that?
Okay, in the fall, generally they'll start using a sucker control in about August.
Mm-hmm.
After your tobacco has grown to a certain stage, then you want to restrict that growth.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several ways to do that. the old time way was you walked out through the field and you suckered it by hand.
Yes, sir.
You did that by breaking the top out of the tobacco. But today you got people raising several acres of tobacco, and that's just not economical feasible. So there are several growth retardants on the market today. MH30 is probably the most popular brand name on the market. It's a material that you use from about 1.5 to 2 gallons per acre. Mm-hmm. It'll cost you on average about $6 a gallon for the material. And then you have to apply it by the use of a high boy. And a high boy is just a tall piece of equipment that you can drive through a tobacco field and will spray the MH30 down on the tobacco.
Are you all in that business of spraying for people?
No.
Okay, that's ours.
We do not have the applicators. Yeah. We just furnish the material.
Mm-hmm. Not very many people spray by hand anymore.
Very few. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just the acreage is too large anymore to do by hand.
Later on in the process, of course, as far as additives and so forth, there's not too much left to be done after the sucker control.
No, generally when they spray a sucker control, if there's any fleas on the tobacco or if they have any grasshoppers, mm-hmm. there is some chemicals that they can mix with your MH30 to control the grasshoppers or the fleas or any aphids.
What are they called? What collectively is there a term for those? They're insecticides, I guess.
Insecticides, yes.
Okay.
A good product is Orthene. That's mm-hmm. made by the Chevron Chemical Company. Mm-hmm. It's good for grasshoppers and aphids and flea beetles. Generally, any insects that would mm-hmm. chew on your tobacco leaf.
And they're not too expensive?
No. They're... In most cases, you're only talking about between $5 and $10 an acre.
Yeah, to add to the MH30s. What about, you said the MH30 is $6 a gallon, and how far would that go?
Okay, you want between 1.5 gallons and 2 gallons to the acre.
Okay, so that's not, still not very expensive.
Anywhere between $9 to $12 an acre for your MH30.
I guess at one time, and I don't know if your tenure with the group probably doesn't go back this far, maybe. There were some farmers that were using coke in their barns to help the curing process. That's just about disappeared now.
Yes, there are a few of your older farmers that still use coke. Uh-huh. It's mostly been replaced anymore by LP gas.
There are still some people, though, that are using heat.
Yes. There is a lot of people that use
heat
for carrying the back.
Okay.
Most of it is in the form of LP gas. There is a stove, some stoves that you put out in your tobacco barns, uh-huh. and they run on LP gas. Yeah.
Well, you just close them up as much as they can in the barns. And do you all provide any of those products?
Yes, we sell LP gas.
Uh-huh. Do
we don't sell coke. There's a place over at Ripley, a high, where you can still buy coke. There's a little coal yard over there.
Uh-huh.
Very few places with coke anymore.
Yeah, well, I guess it got expensive. I guess gas would be awful expensive too, wouldn't it?
Gas is expensive. I don't know the price of coke anymore. Uh-huh. The thing about it, it's just so much easier to use gas.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I guess really when you look at it from a labor savings, probably gas is cheaper than coke.
This is side two of a tape with Charles Meadows. We were talking about the coke or the gas to heat tobacco to help cure it along. Another kind of set of products, there for a while it got a little popular, mechanization got popular in the tobacco field, stripping machines. People even were, the UK was experimenting with cutters. Of course, they went from tying tobacco to bale boxes. Do you all, most of the farmers manufacture them themselves, or do you sell very many bale boxes or
We sell a few. Uh-huh. Generally, the farmer can buy a kit
and
make his own bale box cheaper than he can go out and buy one from a company. We can buy them from people that make them, and then we turn around and resell them. And you got several different people handling them, and so you got right smart cost involved there.
What's a bail box? And of course, there's different styles. I guess there's.
Well, there's several different styles anymore, and you're talking about anywhere from $25 for a little simple one bail box to you can get on up to $600-$700 for some very fancy three boxes in a row with an air compressor to compress them with, and get some right elaborate boxes that are maybe necessary or maybe really not that necessary.
The stripping machines and so forth, were you ever into selling any of those at all?
Yes, we sold a few stripping machines. I guess we threw away more than we sold.
That's right. Yeah, they...
Stripping machines did not really go over that big. There's nothing wrong with a good stripping machine. I think really what happened, you got so many different people making stripping machines, and they all tried to beat out their competitor, and you got a lot of junk on the market.
Right.
So they kind of ruined themselves. A large tobacco farmer that raised several acres of tobacco, a stripping machine was very beneficial to him. But the average, at least in our area, at least in the state of Kentucky, the average tobacco farmer could strip his tobacco by hand with his family and with what hard hands he already had to pay on the farm. A lot cheaper than going out and investing into mechanical strippers. I doubt that there's many people in Mason County anymore with stripping machines. And I know there was several companies that went bankrupt trying to manufacture these machines. And I know that I had about six that I finally hauled to the dump and threw away that cost a lot of money, $1,200 a piece. And I know another company, there was a in Maysville called Maysville Tobacco Machinery Company. And I know at one time the owner of that company told me he had over 60 on hand that he was just gonna scrap out. Most of your farmers employ a certain amount of help year round. And it's kind of a natural in the fall and winter months, when these people aren't working out in the fields to come into the barns and strip tobacco.
Right.
So it just kind of helps pay these people's wages that you're going to have regardless.
Yeah. That's about it, the extent where your services stop to the equipment level. You don't do much with
no
equipment.
Once the tobacco is cut and housed, that's about where we quit.
Well, I mean also with your product line, you don't sell setters and those kind of things.
No, we don't sell setters. Or there are a few mechanical tobacco cutters. Very few. They haven't been very successful.
Let me ask you about your relationship with farmers. Farmers are, your business. How do you find farmers to be as customers?
The farmer, I feel like, in most cases, is the best customer we can have. Now, in our type of business, we sell to city households, to rural people, to the urban trade. I mean, we sell anything from garden seed to canning jars to paper towels to soft drinks.
Yeah, frozen food occasionally.
Frozen food. But the true farmer, I feel like, is the most honest people we deal with. He will always pay you. Where we have dealt with people they are professional people that we have hard times getting our money from.
Yeah, I want to get more into detail on that in a minute, but I just...
Now, the farmer sometimes, I think, can be the dumbest person we fool with. Mm-hmm. The farmer has a tendency to overdo it. Mm-hmm. You take just like on your chemicals.
I see.
You know, we're the recommendation is maybe a gallon of a certain chemical to the acre. He says, well, if a gallon does good, just think what 2 gallons
right.
will do.
Yeah.
And we have got into some problems with your growth retardants, like your MH30s. Mm-hmm. That was one of the reasons that the tobacco buyers went overseas to buy some tobacco, because we was putting on too much.
Right.
And you get a buildup of this. Mm-hmm. Even in the spring of the year, you know, tobacco has either been on a poundage basis or an acreage basis, and mm-hmm. the farmer would maybe be allowed to grow 10,000 pounds of tobacco. Mm-hmm. But he says, well, I don't want to take a chance. I'm going to try to grow 15,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. And he built up a surplus,
right.
and he, yeah. over a period of time, he has hurt himself.
Right.
So the farmer, I feel like, is the most honest people that we have ever dealt with. But sometimes they can also be the most stupidest people.
Contrarian.
They hurt themselves.
Yeah. I wanted to bring it up, and I've gotten it from other sources too, but the MH30 was a problem. But, you know, particularly with some of our foreign markets, like the Germans and the Japanese, were very concerned about that buildup. There's really not anything. You're still going to use sucker control, I guess. It's just a matter of applying the right amount.
That's right, the right amount. And what you do, the reason sometimes they would apply more, you try to hurry up the process.
I see. Uh-huh.
And you just can't get in a hurry with some of the crops that we grow.
Yeah. Some other things about the farmers. Do you find that, are there fewer farmers for you to deal with?
Yes, since I've been dealing with the farmers, basically since 1970, there's a lot of small farmers
mm-hmm.
that are just going out of business, either going bankrupt or selling out.
Mm-hmm.
And your farming is getting to be anymore where it's got to be on a large scale basis. The small family farm is having a hard time to compete. And farming is a science, and it's more or less got to be done on a large scale basis.
Do you find, because of the larger farms, that they're more likely to come and use the chemicals and do the kinds of things that are necessary?
Or? Yes.
Okay. What about the age of the farmers? Do you see, are there not as many young farmers? Or?
Unfortunately, right now, I don't know the average
sure.
age of the American farmer, but I know in our area, very few young people are getting into farming.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that is due for several different reasons. Farming is not easy by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Farming, in one sense of the word, is not that rewarding. For the boy that wants to stay on the boy or the girl that wants to stay on the country farm, it's a lot of hard work. You don't make a whole lot of money, but then again, it can be very rewarding if that's what you want.
Right.
But then again, a lot of people want to get out into the world and make a lot of money.
Yeah, you're thinking about financially rewarding the farming, won't
financially rewarding, it's not going to be in farming.
Right.
But then again, there's more to look at too.
Sure.
A lot of people just like to be out in the open, work with the animals and the ground and the soils.
Have some freedom of when you want to do things. Talk with me a little bit about financial considerations. I know that I've talked to bankers and people that deal with farm mortgages, and of course, a lot of farmers were not as bad as maybe some areas. And, luckily, this maybe is the southern states rather than midwestern states, because they're probably in harder shape. But How do you handle financial things with farmers? Do you carry? I'm sure you carry credit.
Yes, we part of our business is financing,
mm-hmm.
and that's just a part of doing business mm-hmm. today. And we have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
In the last, farming in the late 60s and early 70s was booming.
Yes, sir.
So you had a lot of people that got into farming.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it cost a lot of money to get into it, but money was easy to get.
Yeah.
And you also had a lot of young people that got into it then that did not put a lot of thinking and a lot of thought behind it. Mm-hmm. So you got a lot of people that got into debt very heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And then as farming kind of went on the backside and the farm economy got worse,
mm-hmm.
then you had a lot of people that owed a lot of money and had a lot of high interest money. And it turns sour on them. So we have to be very careful to protect our business.
Yeah. You were with Southern States during, I guess, really the beginning, the late 70s and the early 80s, I guess, was the time when we really went down in that,
yes.
that bust, when you had high interest rates and people that had, of course, equities and farms went down. Did Southern States lose a lot of
yes.
money, I guess?
Yes. I know our store, we lost some good accounts, some large accounts, not
yes.
good accounts, large.
Well, they were large accounts.
So we went through a 2 or 3 year period there where we mm-hmm. had to write off some money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your farmers just went broke
sure.
during that time.
Right.
A lot of your farming, again, as I said, is a science, and you got to be very careful in what you do. You just cannot go out here and buy a lot of land and pay high prices for it. You can't go out and buy a lot of big equipment just because you'd like to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we had basically a lot of young people that got into trouble that way.
Mm-hmm. So when you have an account here, and of course, some of the costs we were talking about, things will build up, particularly if they, if your customers buy all their needs here, from plants and seeds and chemicals and so forth. You have, I guess, a credit process that your customers go through.
Yes.
And you approve them, and then have certain limits. And we
operate just like a bank does.
Uh-huh.
You know, when the farmer wants to run an account with us, he has to come in and fill out a credit application. It is mm-hmm. thoroughly checked out, and we deal with him just like a bank.
Yeah.
We've got to protect our assets, and we have to operate with him
mm-hmm.
on a very sound financial basis.
What you're saying is that in this day and time, you're very careful about that, and
yes.
conservative, I guess. And
We encourage the people to work with their local financial institutions.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't need to be in the banking business,
right.
But it is a part of our business.
Mm-hmm.
But your larger and farmer will go work with a financial institution, either a
yeah.
bank or a federal land bank or
yeah.
PCAs. And these people can work with the farmer a lot better than we can.
Right.
And at a lot better interest rates.
Better interest rates, right. That's why they would go ahead and do that anyway.
Right.
Okay. So, it's really not in their interest to carry large accounts with you. Because,
no.
It's hurting them financially. You're in the agribusiness industry, and we have, of course, I work at a local college where we have a little program, and you hear a lot of farm people say, well, I'm not going to, I want to stay in agriculture some way, but I don't want to farm because of the, kind of the gloomy outlook, so they want to go into agribusiness. Of course, you have a lot of contact both in your position and people coming in to see you. Is that a growing area?
No, today, the agribusiness area today is depressed
mm-hmm.
due to the farm economy.
Sure.
And you have a number of agribusinesses that are either going bankrupt or closing their doors today. When the farm economy turns around, then our business will turn around. You have to be very careful just to hang on to what you have today in the agribusiness area. It's not a business that I would recommend everybody to try to get into right now. It's very rewarding, but you got to be very careful. And it would be very hard to go out and start from scratch in the agribusiness today.
We've talked mostly about tobacco. How, from your experience here, how important is tobacco in relation to your business? Does it constitute 10% or 20%? Or I know, you know, that's kind of
well,
a real difficult question.
Well, tobacco is very important in our business due to the fact of the fertilizer. About half of the fertilizer that we'll sell in a year's time will be used on tobacco.
I see.
So that's very important. Probably about 30% of the chemicals we sell will be used on tobacco.
Okay.
And then probably 10 to 15% of the other supplies, farm supplies, will be used for tobacco.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about the 10 to 15% of the, I don't know what I wrote down.
Farm supplies.
Okay, farm supplies.
That's miscellaneous supplies.
Yeah, right. Of course, and I guess tobacco provides a good deal of their income, too. I
mean, that's right. The farmer uses that tobacco money. He gets most of it at the end of the year when he sells his crop. Mm-hmm. And it's a big income.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big income for the farmer, and it really carries him throughout the year.
Is that when you see a lot of accounts being paid up or
yes.
caught up a little bit?
At the end of the year, when the farmer sells his tobacco crop, well, in most cases, he'll go pay up all of his debts that he has, either with dealers like us or with the banks and the lending institutions, and he gets caught up with his debts, and if he's had a good year, he's got some extra money, and then he can start off the next year on a good, sound basis.
Despite the problems in agriculture, this business seems to have really progressed and grown. You see lots of, you know, physical improvements here and those kind of things. Do you attribute that? Of course, you know, you're partly responsible for that. Is that because you're expanding the business to other kinds of customers?
Well, no. Well, yes and no. Uh-huh. Our basic business is with the true farmer.
Right.
The thing we try to do is provide every service or every need that we can for the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
We also, you know, dab into LP gas and frozen mm-hmm. food and other items. It's kind of a happy mix.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we're a farm business, and probably 75% of our business will come from farmers.
What kinds of personal future is there for you with the company? What kinds of goals do you is this kind of the optimum position for you, or is there?
Well, I have been further up the ladder, so to mm-hmm. speak, in this position. And I chose to come back because I like working with the general public, the farm public in particular. I've had some jobs where it was strictly desk jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I just like what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a good future for our business because farming is always going to be around.
Sure.
You know, they talk about doing away with tobacco. Tobacco is always going to be raised.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be very different from what it has been in
right.
the past, but there's always going to be a certain amount of tobacco used.
Yeah.
Farming is the largest business in the world, you know. We feed the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that there's a great future for us. It's you're going to have your ups and your downs, but we got to plan ahead, and we work on a 5 and 10 year plan, and right now we're working on our 5, and where we want to be 5 and 10 years down the road, and you got to grow with the future. If a business stands still today, he's losing. So we've got to find ways to grow.
Okay. I appreciate you talking with me.